It's Friday, December 10, 2010. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The big political news out of Washington on Thursday was the action by the U.S. Senate to take no action, in effect, in terms of repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which bars active homosexuals from service in the United States military. Now, the Senate was more or less on the hot seat on this, and there had been a great push from the White House. This particular legislation, the action to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, was part of a larger bill, a defense authorization bill that must be passed before the end of the year. But what happened in the procedural vote on Thursday is that Republicans blocked an effort to attach the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell to the defense authorization bill. Proponents of the repeal say they will bring the issue forward as a standalone bill before the Senate. But when you look at the 57-40 vote, that's three votes short of cloture, which would bring the issue before the full floor, it's hard to imagine that a standalone piece of legislation would fare any better. The fallout from this particular vote is not yet clear, but we need to remember that courts are poised to take action. There's a good likelihood that this issue will go through a further appellate level and eventually end up, perhaps in fairly short order, before the U.S. Supreme Court, even as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is expected to send the Proposition 8 case in California also to the Supreme Court. So the year 2011 is shaping up as a very significant year at the U.S. Supreme Court for cases having to do with the normalization of homosexuality and other gender and sexuality issues. This is going to require a great deal of observation. There is a lot of prognostication going on already, as readers of the court are looking at decisions such as the 2003 case Lawrence v. Texas and successive decisions and trying to anticipate how some of the justices on the court then, continuing on the court now, along with new justices who have never faced similar questions before, are likely to vote. Most court watchers believe that these votes will come down to very close decisions. But the events of Thursday in the Senate indicate that it is unlikely that this issue will face any national decision between now and the beginning of the new year. One final thought on this is why we have to come back again and again to explain why the military and the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy become such a central issue for the society. Well, the reason for that is quite simple. The military is largely indistinguishable, or at least inseparable, from the larger culture. And as dominant as the influence of the military is, the policies established by the military likely become the general policies adopted by the larger government and eventually the comprehensive culture. So, if you want to achieve change, well, the United States military is one very important place to start because the changes that are in effect there never stay there. A story out of Great Britain should have our attention today. A car carrying Prince Charles and the Duchess of Cornwall was attacked on the street in London as rioters, largely students numbering between 400 and 500, took to the streets to protest the action taken by Britain's Parliament yesterday to effectively triple tuition rates for British universities. Now, this was undertaken as a central austerity measure under the sponsorship of the coalition now ruling in Britain's Parliament, and that is the coalition of conservatives and liberals. But when you look at what's really going on in this particular situation, it becomes clear that Britain has no choice. And this comes to the point of the political protests that led to the attack on the car carrying the Prince of Wales and the Duchess. Now, neither one was hurt, and there's some question about why exactly a royal car was found in the vicinity of this particular protest. But what we really see in the aftermath of this event is that these students, following the example set back in 1968 by Parisian students in France, have sought to shut down the political process because they are dissatisfied with the proposal. You can understand why they would be. British students have traditionally paid virtually no tuition. The Labour government under Tony Blair several years ago instigated a measured tuition, but the fact is that Britain's universities are drawing the national budget down to a deficit, and indeed to a disaster. Something has to give, and what has to give eventually is that those who are receiving the education have to make some contribution toward the payment for it. There really is no question. This is one of those situations in politics that draws very pragmatic and similarly principled conclusions. Pragmatically, the British government has no choice. There is no question that austerity measures will have to be put into place because universities, just as other institutions and corporations, cannot indefinitely run massive deficits. And the central funding unit for British universities, that is Britain's national government, cannot continue to pay with money that it simply does not have. education is costly business. It is labor-intensive, and it is rooted in particular practices that cost a great deal of money. Education also takes time. And university students are often the very last to understand exactly what is involved in the costs of their own education. But at the principal issue, it's fascinating to see how political protests do and do not work. These students took to the streets because they were claiming an injustice as Parliament was prepared to raise their tuition rates. But the British people simply have not joined the students in this cause. And the reason for that becomes clear when you see that Britain across the board is sharing an austerity agenda. And it comes to this only, as is so often the case, by desperation. Political protests work when a protest garners public support and forces a kind of change that otherwise would never have happened. As democratic movements spread and democracy became the form of government for nation after nation in the 20th century, protests became a very central means of achieving social change. But now that the issues in so many cases are not so much political as economic, political protests turn out to be far more ineffectual. That certainly appears to be the case in Great Britain, and similarly in places such as Greece and Portugal, where austerity measures have also brought young people and students into the streets. The British students say they will continue their protests until they effect change. Well, my guess is they will not be able to live up to that pledge. A story datelined in Los Angeles that is published in the New York Times gives us an interesting insight into human nature and sinfulness that is certainly an affirmation of what we read in Paul's letter to the Romans in chapter 1. In Romans chapter 1, Paul tells us that human beings suppress the truth in unrighteousness. In other words, fallen humanity is involved in a very continual conspiracy to deny the sinfulness of sin, both individually and corporately. Now, the story out of Los Angeles has to do with a clinic that served pornography performers being shut down by California state health officials after the controversy emerged from a pornography star who turned out to have acquired the AIDS virus and likely to have spread it to others, despite being cleared by this particular clinic. Now, you look at this story more closely, and here's what appears. You have a health regulatory agency seeking to here investigate a health clinic whose sole purpose was to certify pornography performers as clean of the AIDS virus so that they could perform illicit sex acts for video and entertainment purposes. You start to peel the onion back in this picture, and it becomes a very ugly picture of human sinfulness. You have the rationalization of sin. You have the bureaucratization and standardization of means to deal with the effects of sin. You have sin institutionalized in a clinic that exists simply to clear pornography performers so that they will not acquire nor spread the AIDS virus. But you also have here a graphic example of the incapacity, indeed the incompetence, of human beings to manage the effects of sin. Now, we can look at this story from Los Angeles, and we have to see it for what it is. It's a graphic and very tragic illustration of Romans chapter 1. It's easy to see in this case because it's almost a parable in terms of how it applies that particular biblical teaching. But lest we think it is isolated to a Los Angeles AIDS clinic, let's remember that the Romans 1 passage about suppressing the truth in unrighteousness is not just about Californians and pornography stars and those who run health clinics in order to clear them. It's about all humanity. This is a picture of who not only they are, but who we are. We suppress the truth in unrighteousness. In this case, a story from Los Angeles helps us to see it in a very graphic and undeniable way. But if we're really honest, and if we look more closely, we find our own way into a similar conspiracy, and we're drawn ever deeper into it if we allow ourselves to be so. A story this week from the Washington Post brings similar insights. This story is rooted in events at George Washington University, where university administrators announced this week a move comprehensively to gender-neutral housing. Now, co-ed dorms have been a matter of fact on most state university campuses and many private universities, especially among the liberal elite universities, for some time. But don't think this is the same thing. Gender-neutral housing is being pushed by those, especially among the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual community, who claim that gender is an abstraction, simply a social construction, and that people should be able to be free to live with whomever they may choose as a dorm mate or roommate without regard for gender. Totally without regard for gender. Now, I've written about this before, and it's one of those questions that comes up from time to time as people scratch their heads and wonder if such a proposal or policy can be real. But you'll find my article entitled Co-ed Quarters and Free Birth Control, The New Campus Culture, at my website at albertmoeller.com. Let me tell you, these two stories come together, one from Newsweek's Education Edition and one from, again, The Washington Post, because they happen on one campus, or at least focus on one campus. George Washington University becomes the latest elite American college campus to adopt this kind of gender-neutral housing policy. But what really shocks me in the story from The Washington Post is not just that George Washington University has become the latest school to move in this direction, but that so many parents seem to have no trouble with it at all. In fact, The Washington Post story cites two mothers suggesting that they really don't have any problem with this at all. After all, their children are adults and can make these decisions for themselves. Hold that thought for just a moment. The story in Newsweek's Education Edition has to do with the question of whether the Obama Health Care Administration will indeed find birth control pills to be classified as preventative medications, in which case they would be free. And that means free to college students on college campuses through the clinics on those campuses. Now, the controversy over that is going to be interesting, and we'll watch that. But what caught my eye was a student at George Washington University, yes, the very same campus, who simply announced, look, we're adults, we're going to be having sex. She said very clearly, and you'll find this cited in my article, that abstinence is simply not an option. After all, she says, we're adults, and we're going to have sex. Well, when you think about these two statements, the one by the mother saying that these college students were adults, they can make their decisions about gender-neutral housing, and this young woman, a freshman at George Washington University, saying we're adults and we're simply going to have sex, well, there are all kinds of things to take apart there, but one is the notion of adult. Adult actually means being on one's own, taking responsibility, generally holding a job or fulfilling a social function. What you have on America's college campuses, certainly among most undergraduates, is a delayed and extended adolescence. That's not where we want them to end up after the college experience. But if your parents are paying the bills and you're not functioning as a fully independent adult, well, saying you're an adult and you're going to have sex rings somewhat hollow. And yet this is the notion of adult that is foisted upon 18-year-olds by a society through its politicizing and socializing influences. These stories are sad at every level, but you have to wonder how many parents are a part of the problem rather than a part of the solution. These articles certainly will make you wonder. You'll find my article that cites all of this at albertmoeller.com. At 10 o'clock this morning, Eastern Time, Southern Seminary will hold its commencement ceremony. The December commencement ceremony is a very important part of our academic calendar, and today approximately 200 students will cross the platform and receive their diplomas and degrees and go out into the world for Christian ministry and missions. I'll be preaching a commencement message at that service, and I'll be speaking about Isaiah chapter 40, and that singular sentence found in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 5, "The mouth of the Lord has spoken it." That's the foundation for everything we know. You can watch the commencement ceremony by streaming video or archived at www.sbts.edu. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmoeller.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/albertmoeller. For more information about Southern Seminary, just go to sbts.edu. And for information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again on Monday for The Briefing.